Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, a number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. And you can send email messages or Twitter messages to the show at GoForItGann. Make sure you follow us on at GoForItGann and make sure you continue to listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. Expect today to be joined by free agent running back Clinton Portis. And Clinton, he's a free agent right now, had a few workouts, but we're going to see where he stands at this point. Also, host of Picturica, warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars, Mr. Corey Almeida will be stopping on by, and he's going to talk about some of the things he has going on and his beloved Steelers, who took a beatdown last Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens. Also, 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rofe will stop on by. We're going to get Willie's thoughts on what happened in Week 1. And also, boxer Steve Forbes, who spent time in Victor Ortiz's camp, and he sparred with Victor Ortiz as Victor Ortiz prepares for his big fight tonight against Floyd Mayweather. Steve Forbes will stop on by, and he's going to talk about that fight. We're going to get his thoughts on that fight. He knows actually the Mayweather side pretty well, as he was trained by Roger Mayweather and Jeff Mayweather. And he also knows the Ortiz side pretty well, again, as he sparred with Victor Ortiz. Clinton Portis, Willie Rofe, Corey Almeida, Steve Forbes, all here today. Go for it, blogtalkradio.com/pgann. Jeremy, how are you today?
Paul, can you do me a favor? Can you cue that song up that we love on this show? You know, to help resurrect a man's career, maybe? Can you save McNabb's career, Paul?
Save McNabb, everybody. Save McNabb, everybody.
Well, I mean, I like to think I could do some things, but I don't think I'm a miracle worker, and I don't do miracles.
You'll take a miracle ball? You're saying a miracle,
unfortunately. It's sad. It's tough. It's hard for me to say it, but I have to say it, and you called it some time ago. But Donovan McNabb may just be flat out done. 7 for 15, 39 yards, and an interception, and one touchdown. That's not good. That's not good. And this comes on a week where NFL teams pass for a combined 7,842 net yards. I mean, that is the most in NFL history. And Donovan McNabb only threw for 39 yards. 39 yards. I mean, and you look at these offenses now. I mean, I was one who thought maybe, you know, usually the defenses – usually have a little head up on the offenses, and early on in the season, I thought that would be the case here, especially with the lockout and everything. But it's the total opposite. It's total opposite. The offenses now are the ones who are ahead of the defenses. The offenses now are the ones who are putting up big time numbers. That's what the offenses are doing right now. And the defenses, I mean, you saw those big numbers. Tom Brady, what, 517 yards? Cam Newton threw for 422 yards. I mean, these are big-time numbers. Drew Brees threw for over 400. Aaron Rodgers, big-time numbers. I mean, a lot of guys putting up a lot of big-time numbers. That, I mean, I didn't expect it, but it might be what it might be for this 2011 season. But a lot of people are putting up a lot of yards. And Cam Newton, you wouldn't expect any. If anybody would put up 422 yards, you wouldn't expect that to come from Cam Newton. I mean, that was a surprise. But week one, it's only 1 week. The NFL, I said it all the time, is a week-to-week league. It is what it is. 1 week, you may be on top. The next week, you may be on the bottom. But this is a week-to-week league. Don't get too high off of that one victory or one loss. Don't get too low after that one loss. You can't. And you look at it, this is a week-to-week league, and Pittsburgh got blown out. Atlanta got blown out.
Stop.
But
stop.
You know what? When it's all said and done, I think Atlanta's still going to be a very good team. I think the Steelers are still going to be a very good team. The Chiefs got blown out as well. I don't think they will be a very good team. Well, what are your thoughts from week one, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, Paul, that's you're making week one out to be more than what it is in a strike-shortened, you know, or a lockout-shortened offseason. I mean, Donovan is dead, and that's because of the offensive line. And in my opinion, they lost some free agents there, and certainly they brought in McNabb. But it is pretty obvious, too. The NFL right now, I mean, is turning itself into, I think, what you may even call, like, an NBA. They want to see a lot of offense, and that is part of where the passing comes from. When you look at where all this offense comes from, well, there's no more kick returns anymore. So they're starting at the 20, and, it, you know, and kudos, I think, to the NFL, because it certainly made for a fun week one. I mean, I'm going to say this.
No, hold on. Let me interrupt you. No more kickoffs? I mean, come on. That rule stinks. The rule stinks at this point. I know last week you had a couple kickoff returns, but, I mean, the rule still stinks.
It's the but look at what it did for this. Look at what it did for the offense, and that's why I say what it was able to do was it puts almost 80% of the time, and that's what the NFL was looking for. They want their number was in the high 80s. They want 86% of the time a touchback. Basically, what they want is teams to be they want 80 yards of offense. So again, they're giving each team and each offense an ability to rack up yards, and it's a pass happy league again, like it was in the 70s. And I mean, certainly, like Cam Newton. I mean, if anybody thinks the Panthers are serious, it's a joke. He's obviously going to.
Let's be clear. This has been a pass happy league for a long time now. I mean, passing the ball for a long. This is a pass happy. This has been a pass happy league the past few years. This has been a pass happy league. If you look at it, I mean, look at the Packers won it last year. You had the Saints the year before. Those teams threw the ball a lot. Threw the football a lot. I mean, the NFL will tell you that this rule was put into place for injury protection, to protect guys from injuries and things of that nature. But I think, again, you were taking out a big key component, an exciting component of the game, and that is the kickoff return. That is one of the more exciting plays, not only in football, but in sports. And they say at some point the numbers should even out in terms of that with the weather getting colder and everything. But, again, we shall see. But I guess, I don't like it.
But we know as well as anybody. I mean, like you called it, this is a league of 1 week, and it's a league of, I mean, now they're like, it's what have you done for me lately? You know, everyone thinks because the Steelers got blown out in week one, they have something to be worried about. It was week one. This is what happens every week one. But you also remember, believe nothing for the first two or three games. And I say that because some of these teams you clearly now recognize, especially teams like the Steelers when Roethlisberger had some injuries. Injuries, especially on the offensive side of the ball, will cost you more than the defensive side of the ball because, Paul, if you're passing the ball, it's a timing league, and when you don't have the timing, it clearly shows all offseason what did the Ravens talk about. Joe Flacco, I'm sure all offseason Joe Flacco was way, you know, to his credit, was working out, was getting his rhythm down. When you look at some injuries, especially on the offensive side, you're certainly seeing where it was going to hurt you. I mean, I will guarantee you this right now. No better than 7-9 will the Colts be this year, with or without Peyton Manning. Because forget it, they might. It will happen in week four. he will be shut down for the whole year because they're going to be 0-4 with no chance to do anything, and they're not
going to. I don't even think Peyton Manning is going to come back this whole year. He may come back here again, but if I'm the Colts, I tweeted this. This is a blessing in disguise. This could be a blessing in disguise because right now the way they looked, they are now in the Andrew Luck sweepstakes. They have now gotten themselves in that sweepstakes.
Yep,
and I said this before. I said it again. I said it before. This is similar to what happened with the San Antonio Spurs. And David Robinson went down that year, and that begat Tim Duncan. And that set up that franchise for the next 10 to 15 years. This might be the same situation here. If Peyton Manning stays out the whole year, which I think he will, if he stays out the whole year, with Kerry Collins as the starting quarterback, they cannot get it done. They cannot flat out get it done. And bottom line is this, this could truly be a blessing in disguise. Let's bring in now 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rowe. Willie, how are you, sir?
Good. Every time I talk to you guys, no, I'm in the airport.
You're a busy man, doing a lot of traveling, I see, sir.
Well, I'm going to check out see what the Cowboys are going to do with the 49ers this weekend.
Okay. And I think they should definitely come on back and get a victory there. Meaning the Cowboys.
Yeah, we'll see. What they need, well, it's a win game for the Cowboys. And, you know, Tony Romo's got some question marks, so we'll see what happens. But, I'm listening to you guys. What do you think Peyton Manning is going to be able to give you when he comes back? You know, if he comes back with 3 surgeries on the neck, I mean, how much more can he give you? How much more did he have left?
That's the future.
Question a little bit with Peyton Manning, but he is Peyton Manning, so you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. But I see exactly what you're saying. I mean, 3 neck surgeries in the last 19 months. That's not good. That's not good.
Yeah,
I mean, he could be done.
We're talking about your neck here. So, I mean, we never were talking about guys getting the neck fused and coming back. And the crazy thing is, he signed a contract and didn't even take a physical. I mean, he was having neck surgery. So, I don't know. It's going to be, that situation is a little touchy for me. 35 years old. You know he's got more money than baby Jesus in the bank. So, I mean, I don't know what he's got left to prove.
you're bringing it from the player, almost like player. I give you credit. That's like a future GM talking right there because that's what attracts me the most. If you're Peyton Manning, honestly, it is this raging competitive drive inside him, but how do you walk back on the field when you recognize, like you just said, this is your neck. This is not your back. It's not your knee or your shoulder. This is the thing attached to your brain.
And I'm sorry. I know you don't want to see it, but in the next year or two, I mean that whole coach team. That's they're going to be in the transition period anyway. I mean, you know they're making some changes. You got a new head coach. I mean, Reggie Wayne. Some of those guys are getting older. So you know that. Trainee, I mean, that team's going to be in the transition stage anyway. They're going to be making more of a youth movement. So, you know, if you're going into a rebuilding process, you know, that's not something you really want to do at 35, 36 years old.
And I agree with you. And I just think at this point, with the Colts situation, if I'm a Colts fan, I'm hoping for a bad record, and I'm hoping for the opportunity to select Andrew Luck out of Stanford and kind of turn this thing around and see what happens going forward. Willie, you look at it, man, this week a lot of teams, a lot of contenders got beat down. The Steelers got beat down by the Ravens. The Falcons beat down by the Bears. And the Chiefs, a team that won their division last season, was beat down by the Buffalo Bills. I mean, do you think these teams will bounce back? Because I don't think the Chiefs will, but I think the other two will.
The Chiefs have too many injuries. And, you know that last year they got that offense going. But if you remember 2 years ago, I mean, what is their identity? Are they going to be able to run the ball? They let the best lineman go, by the way, my good friend. I've talked to him while Brian Waters, who we talked about this ball out of Chad Johnson and Ocho Cinco and Haynesworth. I think Brian Waters played every snap in that game. So picking him up 8 days ago and them playing every down was unbelievable, especially with the injuries they have on the offensive line. He looked great out there. The Chiefs, I don't, you know, you know they're not, it's not going to be a probably a good year for them. I think the Steelers can bounce back. It's, you know, they have a lot of talent, a lot of heart. They're the oldest team and almost 27 years old, a person, which isn't old, but in football, you know, it could be. But I think the Steelers will bounce back, and I the Cowboys are in a much worse situation. I mean, what are they, you know, they, it's concerning. The 49ers look pretty good, so, you know, I picked the Jets, but it's early in the season, but Baltimore looked awfully good the other day.
But Baltimore definitely did look very good against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And you talked about the Cowboys, Tony Romo, giving it away again, doing what he has done so many times, a choking situation with Tony Romo. I mean, what do you make of this guy? Is this who Tony Romo is? He can put up some numbers. He can do a lot of flashy and nice things. But at the end of the day, the guy always finds a way to lose. Is this who he is?
Well, I think he was trying to force it, too, and trying to do something a little too much. I mean, Dez Bryant at that point, he wasn't helping the team. He couldn't run. You know, just like the Miami game when they had those cornerbacks out there that couldn't defend the guys. I mean, if you can't run, you're not really helping the team. So, you know, why are you, you know, you're still in the game. So, you know, they had the safety over the top on that pass anyway, which shouldn't have been a thrown ball. But I just think Tony Romo's got to, you know, he's a very good quarterback, and he plays great in certain games. But like you said, I mean, that was the first game of the season. It wasn't a playoff game. So let's see how the year pans out for him, and let's see what he can do if he gets to the playoffs, if they do get to the playoffs this year. But this is going to be a real tough road game for him. And I will say this about the Falcons. I think the Falcons can bounce back. They went and played a fired-up crowd on the grass stadium. You know, that was outdoors. So, you know, that was a tough game for him. And let's face it, Matt Ryan's got to play better on the road. He does play as good on the road as he does at home. It's real. He's lights out at home, but he's got to play better on the road.
Willie, we got to go back to Tony Romo because I think I heard something, but I'm not sure. You want to go out there and say that you believe this guy is a top flight NFL quarterback, given the fact that, I mean, really look at what he's been given and what he does with it. All he does is throw interceptions. All he does is lose the game for them. When you look at Drew Brees, when you look at Peyton Manning, when you look at the real, even Matt Ryan, who I think is a two times better quarterback, this is a guy that's in Dallas with the media and the attention, and is nothing more than he's a backup, a glorified backup.
Now you're crazy.
Well, the guy we played against him in the preseason that last year, 2005, when Bledsoe was starting, and Romo took their job. Now, Romo's been playing pretty much like Romo. He's supposed to be falls apart. I think it's been the expectations have been too high, and it's been too many egos down there. And, you know, they have to make sure, you know, that's why they need a defense, a head coach that's going to, you know, crack the whip a little bit, and Romo's got to play better. But I'm not going to say that he's the backup quarterback. I think he's, he tried to be like Brett Favre. He's somewhat of a gunslinger. And, you know, he's got to calm down in the clutch situations of the games. He's got to convert. You know, Brett Favre, that was his Achilles heel late in his career. You know, he was a gunslinger a lot of the time late in his career. But in those big games, he made some bad plays. And it cost Minnesota Vikings a trip to the Super Bowl against the Saints. And I think they would have won that Super Bowl if he didn't throw that pick.
You go back to
and it cost the Green Bay Packers when he threw that pick in the playoff game, and they had a chance to go to the Super Bowl. So it cost him 2,000 this year when he could have made it another way.
But when you go back to your playing days, you know, especially with New Orleans and the Saints, in my opinion, you could put him in that type of mix. You guys had some almost talented quarterbacks, and that to me is what Willie Rose represents. He's almost talented. He like you say. A talented quarterback does not throw these interceptions. Brett Favre was a one-in-a-million arm. The interceptions he threw were part of it because, I mean, he had an arm that you will see in the NFL once every 10 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wish we could have had a quarterback like that. I mean, my rookie year, when they got into it with Bobby Aper and let him go, we had Wade Wilson, and we had Jim Manning for a couple of years. Then after that, it was quarterback by committee. I mean, we didn't really get a true quarterback, but we got Jeff Blake, and then he got hurt, and then we got Aaron Brooks had that breakout year. We made the playoffs, but after that, when I got to Kansas City, I had Trent Green. You know, Trent Green wasn't going to run around, but you know, you protect him, we could throw the ball. So I had a real quarterback. So I mean, if I could have a chance to play with a guy that was mobile, could move around, and had the athleticism Bomo had, I mean, he had some intangibles, but he's got to understand, and you got to think about it too, Jimmy. This guy, you know, he's played a few years in the league now, but I mean, he didn't have a lot of experience before being a starting quarterback. You know, well I can't say that. That was 2005. So you know, he's had 5-6 years to see what he's going to do. And I think the jury is still out on Walmart. I still think he has something to prove. But like you said, it was week one, and it's going to be a long season.
And I know Jeremy had 1.7. Romo was a backup, but I think Romo's still a very good quarterback in this league, and I think he has a lot of talent, a lot of ability. He just has to find a way to stop making that big mistake at the wrong time. And we're talking to Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rofe. And Willie, we look at it, I mean, a lot of people put up a lot of numbers this week, especially quarterbacks, and Cam Newton was one of them. 422 yards passing, his first game as a player. It's a rookie record for a player. And you look at Cam Newton, are you shocked at what you saw? Because I was. I mean, I didn't expect these type of numbers.
You know, I didn't expect him to, and I think he did. He came into the league and he sent the message, but now they're going to be looking at him. I mean, rookie comes in and throws like that. He hit Steve Smith both on some routes that you know, he saw in the corner blitz on that one route, and the safety went over the top. So he read that coverage, which was excellent. And then other play, Steve Smith made a great play, and he threw a great ball. It's going to be, he's special. He's going to be special. And I thought that he would be special. With his size, 6'5", and he can take off running on you. We haven't seen the kid take off running yet either, but, you know, he needs to watch himself. But this kid is going to be real special. And once he starts understanding the game and understanding more of those coverages, I think Cam wants to be good, and he wants to be special, because I think that was a knock on him coming out of Auburn. Can he read those defenses and read those coverages? And, you know, it might take him a little while, but he will be a special quarterback, and he showed, you know, how good he can be in the future. But first game, throwing for 422.
And you look at another guy who put up some big-time numbers, Tom Brady, 517 yards passing against the Miami Dolphins. You add in Ocho Cinco, though he only had one catch in that game. But those tight ends, Gronkowski and Hernandez, looked very good in that game. And the Patriots offensively looked like a better football team.
Oh, my God. I mean, for them to pick up Ocho Cinco and him not even playing in the second half, and be standing over there, and for him to spread that ball around like that, I mean, that just shows you how good Tom Brady is. And like I said, you can't cover all those guys. The problem with it is they're running a lot of they're switching up to no huddle, so they're switching their packages up. Well, by the time the defense sees it, try to switch their packages up, the guys that are tired, it's too late. So how are you going to cover these guys? And when Brady sees the mismatch, he's smart. He knows what a mismatch is, and he's going to take advantage of it. Just like when they had that cornerback that was limping around, that young kid, and he hit Hernandez right over him. I mean, Tom Brady, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And you have to be able to put pressure on the quarterback. And if you're not going to be able to put pressure on him, he'll pick your bar.
Definitely. So, he did that big time.
So Will, I mean, go from that now to, and you heard Paul and I at the beginning of the show talking about Donovan McNabb. I mean, Paul is trying to marry a man, so we don't want to talk about that part of it. What we want to talk about is, I mean, I believe his playing career is over. It's just this will be his last season in the NFL. I mean, what, if anything, did you see out of McNabb that will give Paul, you know, some hope? Because Paul is desperate right now.
You know, I would hope that, I just hope that McNabb ends his career on a good note. He went through a rough year in Washington, and mentally, I'm gonna make some little excuse, but mentally, it was a tough year, draining year for him last year. You know, the way they did him in Washington, after trading for him, does that work on his mental psyche? Is he thinking, you know, can I be a productive NFL quarterback anymore? And I would like to see him go out and have some good games this year and go out on a good note. You know, him beat the Hustle Production this year, and maybe that's only one game. And, you know, I don't know who they let the receiver, you know, other than Harvin, I mean, who's he throwing the ball to? I know they got the tight end, but they've
they got Berrien, but, you know, they let Sidney Rice go in this offseason. So, I mean, it's not a lot of weapons there for him to work with. Does have Adrian Peterson, though.
But he got to run the ball, Paul. They got to take pressure off him. Run the ball, play action, you know, throw the ball to the tight end. So I think the key to that team is how many touches Peterson will get.
Right. But you do think he could bounce back from this? He can bounce back, but do you think he will?
I think he has a lot of pride. And I think Donovan, if it is going to be his last year, I think he will go out and have some good games. I think he will have a productive year, and I think he'll have some good games. I mean, I say he'll throw, I don't know if he'll throw for 3,000 yards, but I hope that he throws somewhere close to it.
And Willie, we look around the NFL. I mean, we see a lot of injuries, and John Beeson goes down, Achilles. Eric Berrien, Kansas City, goes down with the ACL. A lot of injuries from the Rams. Bradford messed his hand. You got Steven Jackson with the quad. I mean, should we expect to see a lot more of this throughout this season?
These Achilles are worse. Oh, man, these Achilles are just – I mean, that to me shows that, they, you know, they've not been able to practice and run around with the cleats on. But you know you're going to do some ACLs. I mean, guys are playing with partially torn ACLs throughout their career, and the knee just gave out. So, like, Terrell Owens was playing probably with a torn ACL last year, didn't know it. And then, you know, what gets me is all these torn biceps and triceps. You know, that's the stuff that I didn't really see when I was playing. You know, guys tearing some of these chest muscles. I mean, I don't understand that, you know. That's the one that you see more now than you didn't see, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
And you're right, and I mean, I think we're going to see a lot more of this during this NFL season, William. We're going to hear a lot more from you throughout this NFL season, man. It was a pleasure talking to you. I see you're tweeting again. That's a good thing, and you're getting a lot of followers. So make sure you follow back at Go4Kent since you're doing all that tweeting again.
I will make sure. Well, I'll be realistic with you. I don't do the tweeting. I think my agent and them are doing that, you know, trying to get a little Hall of Fame buzz for me. So, you know.
Don't tell nobody. I'll let them do that.
But that's really not my thing. But I will be enjoying some football, and I will be able to watch this game up close tomorrow and tell you guys how Tony Romo looked this weekend. But I'm going to make sure I watch Tony Romo real close and let you know how he plays late in the game.
I'll tell you what, Willie, that sets the stage then for next week. I think you'll come in as the resident Tony Romo expert, and you'll be able to tell us, is this man, does he belong as a starting quarterback, or will you have converted, you know, to my side of the table and say, he is nothing more than a career backup who is, he's got the star on his helmet, which makes him as somebody who's really a nobody.
Okay, well, as long as he didn't have a year like Carson Palmer had last year, we'll see what Tony Romo does. And I don't think he's going to have a year like Palmer had last year.
I don't think he will either. Willie, nothing but the best of luck, man. Have a great flight. Have a great time, man. And let's do this again next week.
All right, then. Y'all have a good one.
Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, tweeting again. That's always a good thing. Back on the tweet grind, if you will. And I wanna talk on something else. Jeremy, you've been talking about Tony Romo and really, really getting into this guy and saying some things that, in my opinion, are just wrong and just not correct. I mean, let's look at Tony Romo over the years, and let's look back even last year. Last year, granted, he was hurt, so the numbers won't be big, but let's look at the year before, 2009, over 4,000 yards passing, 26 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. That does not sound like a backup to me. 2008, 3,448 yards, 26 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. Again, that does not sound like a backup to me. 2007, over 4,000 yards passing, 36 touchdowns, 19 picks. Again, that does not sound like a backup to me. And I look at the numbers. I look at the quarterback rating, 97.4 in 2007, 91.4 in 2008, 97.6 in 2009, In 2010, he had 94.9, but I won't even talk about the 2010 season because it was a shortened 2010 season where he only played six games. Again, I go over those numbers, and I say to myself, are those numbers of a backup quarterback? I have to absolutely positively say no. Granted, the guy does find a way to make some big mistakes at the wrong time. But in terms of these numbers and in terms of his ability and in terms of everything he has done, I think Tony Romo still is a very good quarterback in this league. And I think Tony Romo will have a good year for the Dallas Cowboys. And I actually predicted the Dallas Cowboys to get a wild card spot in the NFC. So in order for that to happen, Tony Romo has to have a pretty good year. And I expect Tony Romo to have a good year.
Well, that's great, Paul. And I mean, we certainly recognize on this show, you get paid to talk about stats. I get paid to make sense. He passes for 4,000 yards 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago at the start of the show, or 20 minutes ago at the start of the show. You're talking about the NFL is a pass-happy league. So 4,000 yards.
It is a pass-happy league, but not everybody can throw over 4,000 yards.
Paul, I let you make no sense without interrupting you. Let me make sense without interrupting me. Not everyone except a starting quarterback on a team, when you play for the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to pass the ball. I mean, listen, let's keep it real. I think Tony Romo, as I said, in terms of where he belongs in this league, if you really want to look at it, if you're not a top seven quarterback in the NFL, which he is clearly not, the difference between you and a backup is one thing, W-2. You're never going to get anywhere. Tony Romo gets 4,000 yards because the Dallas Cowboys, A, were walking into a new stadium, and B, I mean, what has he done when you look at the players? He played with Terrell Owens, Paul, who brought Randall Cunningham to the only Super Bowl that Randall went to.
You talk about Donovan.
Or Donovan McNabb. I'm getting emotional. I'm thinking of Randall because if Randall played with him, it would have been a quarter. It would have been a world championship for the Eagles. Instead, we got sucked into Donovan McNabb and thinking that he was better than Terrell. And look at what the Cowboys did. They kept Tony Romo.
Okay, I mean, you look at it, okay, Tony Romo, in terms of being a top 10 quarterback, I look at him, if he's not 10, he's in the top 15. He's definitely in the top 15 if he's not 10. You look at it, I guess you have to start with Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay. You say he's probably one of the best. Matt Ryan, I'm not going in no particular order. Breeze, another guy who's one of the top quarterbacks. Vic, again, no particular order. Brady, you talk about Rivers.
Sanchez.
And you talk about Roethlisberger. I won't say Sanchez. Manning went healthy. So I named about 8-9 quarterbacks there.
Yeah.
Tony Romo's in the top 10, maybe a top 10 quarterback. And I'm just going through the list just randomly, not putting any rank to anything. But Tony Romo, looking at it, I think I named about maybe 9 quarterbacks who may be better than him. But Tony Romo is a top 10 quarterback, I believe, in this league.
Let me ask you.
Who's better than Tony Romo? Eli Manning better than Tony Romo? Is Kevin Cobb better than Tony Romo? I mean, just go to our NFL rosters. Ryan Fitzpatrick, better than Tony Romo. Chad Henne, better than Tony Romo. Mark Sanchez is not better than Tony Romo. If the Jets actually had Tony Romo, maybe they would have gotten to a Super Bowl, and maybe they would even won a Super Bowl. But the Denver Broncos, Kyle Orton, is not better than Tony Romo. You look at the Chiefs, Matt Castle, not better than Tony Romo. You look at the Raiders, Jason Campbell, not better than Tony Romo. Joe Flacco, to me, is not better than Tony Romo. You look at the Bengals, Andy Dalton, not better. The Browns, Colt McCoy, not better. Matt Schaub, you might be able to make an argument there with the Texans. Peyton Manning, obviously, is better, but he's not playing right now. Luke McCown in Jacksonville is not better right now. You go to Tennessee, Matt Hasselbeck is not better than Tony Romo. There's not many quarterbacks better than Tony Romo. Just look around the league. Obviously, Drew Brees is better than Tony Romo in New Orleans, Tampa. Josh Freeman, not better. Cam Newton, not better. Matt Ryan, better. Possibly, but I mean, you can make an argument. I think you can even make an argument there. McNabb, obviously, not better. You know, the Detroit Lions, Stafford, coming on, not better. Cutler, not better. I mean, Tony Romo, in my mind, is a top 10 quarterback in the National Football League. Go ahead.
Well, you're just going to sit there and scream over me. So in two seconds, I'm either going to hang the phone up or I'm going to start screaming over you. You're not being fair. Like you're sitting here and just yelling over me, telling this European who's not better. You're going to sit around and say, you're honestly going to sit around and say that there isn't a really good case to say that Matt Hasselbeck is on the same level as Tony Romo.
Who would you rather have as your quarterback, Matt Hasselbeck or Tony
Matt
Romo?
Matt Hasselbeck. I'm telling you, if
you're talking crazy now. I don't even think the Tennessee Titans would agree with you.
Yeah,
he plays for them.
Go look at the stats, Paul.
I don't even think Mike Munchak would agree with you.
Go look at the stats.
None of these guys would agree with you.
I
don't think these guys would agree with you.
Yeah.
I don't think they would agree with you.
His
teammates in Tennessee wouldn't even agree with you.
Paul, I'm telling you, Matt Hasselbeck is the 12th best quarterback. Tony Romo is the 12th best quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he is.
All right, he's the 12th best.
You're going to compare rookie quarterbacks that
I'm just going around the league. I was just going around the league.
You're not going around the league. Eli Manning or so who do you want, Paul? Go to Eli. Who do you want, Paul? Honestly, Eli Manning.
I want Tony Romo, but Eli Manning didn't win a Super Bowl. But I would want Tony Romo.
You're sick. How about that? How about the fact that that sums it up? You're the same man that's you're writing songs over a man. So should we? I mean, how do you, who write songs over a man, have any? You shouldn't even be allowed to be in a discussion about anything of any importance.
Well, I mean, I just believe in my mind that you look at it, and if you write songs about men, women, it doesn't matter if that's what you're into. It doesn't matter. But the way I look at it is this, and look at this whole thing. I just think that Tony Romo is a lot better than you're giving him credit for. I really do. And, I just think he is a lot better than you're giving credit to. You're not giving the man enough credit. You're really not. You're not giving him enough credit.
Let me re-clarify what exactly I think you skewed this as. When I said he was a backup, and I told you that, in the context of, he is absolutely positively not what we're going to call – he's not a championship. He is not going to bring you a championship. He had too many opportunities to fail at that. He is one of these quarterbacks who is certainly able to, in this league, he is a farce. He is what the NFL really – I believe what the NFL wants to perpetrate as a top-flight quarterback. It's a lie. It's not real. It's fake. It's what Jeffrey Lurie used to try to do in Philadelphia, saying we want to be a gold standard team, which means now when you look at the Eagles, especially this year, what he talked about was he did. He said they want to be exactly – they are modernizing this team to near championship-caliber teams, where before – they wanted to be a gold standard. They wanted to be able to make the playoffs, sell out their stadium, make money, and be profitable. That's the NFL. That is, in my opinion, the new Jerry Jones. This guy, to me, is the 12th best, 10, 12, 14th best quarterback in the NFL today. They more than any team, had more opportunities with a guy who's just a complete, he's a hack, he's a has-been, and he's a loser.
And you're talking about Tony Romo here.
Who else am I other than you or Tony Romo? It's one of the same.
Well, Tony Romo, again, we'll continue this discussion later. But Tony Romo is, in my opinion, a top 10 quarterback. And you can't really name, if not top 10, at least top 12 or 13. You look at it, he is one of the better quarterbacks in this league. And there's not many quarterbacks you can name better than Tony Romo. And there are not many running backs you can name better than the guy we're going to bring in now, free agent running back, Clinton Portis. Clinton, how are you, sir?
I'm all right, man. How y'all doing?
We doing well, doing very well, Clinton. And right now, your situation, you had a workout with the Seahawks a few weeks back. They didn't sign you. Tell us what's going on with you at this point.
Basically, just sitting around waiting, man. You know, I think – a lot of teams wanted to see if I was healthy. see how it went through workouts, and I don't think the Seahawks was ready to sign the running back. Neither were the Patriots at the time I went in. It was more of for future consideration. You know, I had to work out with the Dolphins as well. I think they went all right. I think they all went fine. You know, those just weren't the places for them.
And Clinton, right now, the lockout, how much has that affected your situation, you think?
I mean, I think it just affected a lot with football. You know, I can't blame the lockout on me still being a free agent. You know, I think teams were more worried about me not wanting to play or not knowing if I wanted to play or worried about me being injured because it never got out. The news never got out that I was cleared, that I was back 100% healthy and active, because when I finally got cleared, there was a lockout. So, you know, I don't think the news surfaced, and I don't think people were just checking. I think more people were looking into the consideration that I would be walking away from the game, and I'm not.
Well, Clinton, let's go back, because I think what you say, you say about your injury, which I agree with, and then you say it wasn't the lockout, but you make the point of the lockout was it kind of overtook all media and anything, especially players of veteran tenureship like yourself that had these injuries, because the lockout was such a media circus. Players like you get lost in the fray of were you healthy, were you not healthy, and then once it was lifted, I mean, teams literally had like a week to like 2 weeks to fill a roster, to bring people in for camp. Was that, I mean, did that situation affect you more than anything?
Yeah, I don't think teams had the opportunity to do exams and get doctors clearance. You know, I think once the lockout was lifted, all of a sudden it was finding the free agents from the draft, trying to find your free agent, trying to make roster moves, trying to get your roster set. And I think right now teams are just starting to really get out and find out what's on the market. You know, I think the keynote players went fast and numbed these of the world, but, you know, they fulfilled the needs that they had. But everybody else, you know, when it comes to running backs, it's always looking to get younger. And for myself, you know, I knew this was going to be the situation when I left the Redskins, you know, turning 30. A couple weeks back, that teams would be afraid of an older back, and more teams was going to two back situations. But for myself, I took that time just to get healthy, to be ready for the call.
And you look at it, Clinton, right now, do you still feel like you're an every down back in this league?
I know I can be an every down back. You know, I think the NFL just going to two-back systems. You know, there's not many every-down backs left, if any, you know. It's more two-back operations, and I can play in that as well. You know, I think people fail to realize I went through college with James Jackson, Najee Davenport, Willis McGahee, and Frank Gore all in the same room with me as far as backs. You know, we all shared time and split time. I came into the NFL the same way. Terrell Davis, Mike Anderson, Orlando Gary, and Reuben Jones, and myself. So I think teams were just so used to, I think people were so used to thinking, like, oh, it's all about him. He wanted to be all about him. I don't. You know, I'm okay with being in a two-back situation and coming in, you know, when I get my opportunities, just making the most of it.
Well, you bring up an interesting point about, you know, your college career, who you play with, and In the beginning of your career, and certainly most during your career, you became a feature back. And is it better for Clinton Portis now to go into organizations like the Seahawks, where you'll go into that with, you know, with almost coming in and saying you're a second, third down back, and instead of coming in as the feature back, but you're a part of a whole?
I mean, I don't understand the difference. What's the first down back? You know, what's the first or second or third down back? You know, I think just being back and being ready when your number called upon. You know, I think so many people get confused of what type of back, you know, you should be using in this situation. People throw screens on first down. You know, you throw the ball on first down. You run it on second and third sometimes. So I think just being prepared for whatever situation. You know, I think that's the hardest part when you're not the feature back. You know, you don't know when your number going to get called, and you still got to go in and perform at a high level. You know, whether it's one play or 10 plays, you got to be ready to go in and perform.
You know, tremendous answer, and I want to follow that up by, was Clinton Portis totally misrepresented inside the media? The way you answer that question of, it doesn't matter first down, second down, third down, back, but obviously your sometimes relationship with the media, did your career, has that been affected, especially now because of the lockout and you being very outspoken?
I think it has. You know, I think so many people hate to see a stand-up guy, hate to see an outspoken guy, and everybody wants you to just be the model citizen, keep your mouth shut, do what you're supposed to do, and walk away. You know, I came from Lawrence, Mississippi, man. Nobody expected me to ever hear from me in the beginning. So to have a voice and not use it, I think, would be stupid. You know, I'm going to voice my opinion, and I forever will. You know, I don't regret voicing my opinion. I think what happened with me in the media just turned into an unfortunate situation, and I was portrayed as a bad guy, the villain, the bad apple in a locker room, and I really don't think I was, you know. I don't think nobody on no team get along with everybody in the locker room. You know, it's cliques in every locker room. You don't go hang out with the kicker. That's not my best friend. I speak to the kicker. I'm cool with the kicker when we have practice. I talk to him, but after we leave practice, I'm not, you know, hey, man, I'm coming over your house. It's nothing.
Now, I heard an accent, Clinton. Were you trying to play the role of the kicker there, or were you being the kicker?
It don't matter. Whichever one you want to portray. And, you know, I think that's the opportunity the media had. They, whatever they choose to portray is what's portrayed. In the outside world, only gets to that. You know, that's the only thing to pop up in the news today is the negativity. You know, nobody ever talks about the positive that athletes do, or, you know, unless it's the poster child athlete, you know. Nobody talks about the positive. You know, it's 52 players on the team, and it's not always the star that's the most effective in the community. You know, you look at the Lorenzo Alexanders of the world when I was in D.C., and I think I would know a community event that he turned down. So so many people, you know, just don't get the opportunity. They portray you how they want to portray you, and, you know, you got to deal with it. And for myself, I was old enough and had thick enough skin to deal with it. You know, I think it made me grow up. It made me grow up and made me appreciate things. It made me look at things different. But for myself, I don't regret anything.
And never regret. We're talking to free agent running back Clinton Portis. And Clinton, last season, man, that was a tough year for you and the Redskins. I mean, a lot of injuries for you, man. How tough was 2010 for you?
You know, it was tough just being in the situation and having another change, you know, being under new staff, new management, learning a new system. I think it was just tough for everybody. And for myself, to go and get injured, you know, in such a time where I was going to be dependent upon, and after having such a great preseason, you know, and changing and becoming the person they actually, you know, taking the leadership role and trying to be there, trying to be a better teammate, to not be a part of, you know, it was kind of empty. And then knowing that could be my last season and, you know, being on the outs in an organization when they're going through change. So it was difficult, you know. I think all the time that I never had an opportunity to say goodbye to the fans, you know.
Right.
And all the fans' eyes in D.C., I'm not the worst person that the Redskins ever had, you know. I think it's some people who still understand and appreciate the work that I put in and the things that I accomplished while I was there. So for those fans who did appreciate, for the Washington Nation that did appreciate, never having the opportunity to say goodbye, because I got hurt on the road and in both times. You know, I got hurt in Philadelphia and I got hurt in Tennessee. So just never saying goodbye to the home crowd. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. But other than that, it's cool.
And you look at it, Clinton, I mean, you had a lot of success in Washington, but every year it seemed like the Redskins had changes, so many changes, so many different head coaches, quarterbacks, you name it, a lot of changes. How tough was that for you, and how tough was that for the team?
I mean, I think it was tough for the whole team, but being that I was the person who always voiced, oh, man, we didn't address the line, we didn't address this, or we should have did that, you know, I just became the person who looked to be the complaint, you know. I looked to be the fall guy, and then all of a sudden when I leave, look at the lineman they got now. You know, the offensive line rebuilt in no time. So, you know, I think Coach Shanahan got that organization going in the right direction, and he's going to get the people in to fit the scheme, and they're going to do big things. You know, watching the game, they look good. You know, I think they as a team, playing overall team ball, you know, I think they probably look better than most teams in the NFL playing team ball. You know, it was no individual standout. As you look around, Rex had a great game, but they spread the ball to everybody on the offensive side and the defensive side of the ball. Everybody contributed. So they playing great team ball.
And Redskins, they definitely looked good last week against the New York Giants. They really did. And you look at it, Clinton, now, I mean, is there any resentment towards the Redskins organization at this point, or it is what it is for you?
No, there's no resentment, man. You know, I think the Redskins organization, Mr. Snyder and his family, provided outstanding opportunities for me. You know, stuff I never believed I would be in a position to see or do. They gave me an opportunity to do it. You know, I think he provided for me and my family, gave me an opportunity to experience some of the finer things in life and do some of the most amazing things that I can think of. And playing in front of those faithfuls, you know, the Redskins, diehards, and being a part of that nation, you could never regret. You know, I think it got bittersweet in the end because I wasn't playing, and it was back and forth about me not wanting to be there. You know, I just wanted to win. And I think the same with Mr. Snyder. You know, they hired Mr. Snyder about spending money and throwing money around and charging about everything. So you can't satisfy everybody, man. And I think just for myself, the bittersweet was never really having the fair opportunity to prove or to go up and clear my name, you know, and it was always me trying to clear it instead of somebody else. So I have no resentment. You know, I'm really thankful for everything the organization did, and I'm appreciative for my experiences.
So we heard the Daniel Snyder. What about Joe Gibbs playing under him? How instrumental was Joe Gibbs for Clint Portis, the athlete, Clint Portis, the person?
Outstanding. You know, I think each coach that I had, you know, if you go back to my high school coach, I think I had a great high school coach in Ed James, and then I went to college and had Butch Davis, and it was unreal. Like, man, this is Butch Davis. You know, I remember Butch Davis coming from the Cowboys and having the opportunity to play for him and realizing in today's day and age, he's probably one of the best recruiters or got one of the best eye for talent when it comes to college football. If you look at the programs, looking at UNC as well, for what he go out and do. And then going to Denver, playing for Coach Shanahan, who was a mastermind and had the best schemes, you know, my early years playing in Denver, under him and Coach Kubiak, you look at how brilliant the game plans was. And then going to play for a legend in Coach Gibbs was just even more outstanding. You know, it was basic, run-of-the-mill. We're going to run our head to this wall, but we're going to knock it down. And everybody bought into it, you know, win, lose, or draw. Everybody went out and gave their all for four quarters. And then all of a sudden, after Coach Gibbs left, with the Coach Zorn era, it was so much pressure on Coach Zorn because we started out 6-2. It was so much pressure, you know. It seemed as if it was going to be easy. And then all of a sudden, we finished 8-8, and all the problems become exposed. And then the following year, it's me and Coach Zorn don't get alone, and you know, the media took it and ran with it, and we never really had the opportunity to patch because I think it became a hot seat for both of us. And then Coach Zorn was out, and in comes Shanahan, as a savior, and you know, it's Shanahan and Haynesworth, Shanahan and Donovan, Shanahan, you know, changing the program. So it just became a lot, and now I think that you see is no negative attention on that organization. You see how they came together as a team in such a short span, and they playing as a team, and I think that's wonderful.
And you talked about it, McNabb and Haynesworth. Did that really mess up the situation there in Washington, or how much did it affect that situation?
I don't think. I think it just overshadowed. It takes time away from putting the team together. It takes time away from the game plan. I think when you got all grown men, nobody's sitting in the locker room like, oh, man, this is a distraction. I can't believe Alvin and Coach Shanahan not talking. But at the same time, you know, I think it just take away from the game plan. It take away the attention for the team. And now that myself, Albert, and Donovan not there, you know, there's no negative attention. I haven't heard anything negative about the organization,
right,
or who they need to get rid of or who they need to clean out. And when you lose that distraction, all of a sudden the media on their side, you know, it was, is it Rex? You know, is it who it's going to be? Is it Rex? Is it Beck? And all of a sudden, Rex go out and throw for 300-something yards, and everybody touch the ball, and now Rex is, oh, man, look what Rex can do. Rex is fast in the Super Bowl. So you already knew he can do that. It's not exciting. He played at UF where he was gunslinging university. So all of a sudden, you know, it's just good to see those guys had an opportunity to go out and focus and clean things up. And, you know, hopefully Mr. Snyder get to where he want to be. And I just hope if they make it, whatever team I'm on is the opposing team.
We're talking to free agent running back Clinton Portis. And Clinton, you have the characters, man. Southeast Jerome, Pro Sweets, Expector Tutu. Can you bring these characters back at that next stop?
Man, you know what's crazy? I sit and watch TV, and I see so many just clips on ESPN and other guys doing this. And I just see, you know, I really think it's funny because you know, it was original when I did it, you know, and I think I started and so many people got different personalities and different images. You know, when I did it, all of a sudden it was a cry for help with me. So I'm not sure if these guys know, but it won't be long before people say they're going through things and they're crying for help and they don't know who they are. You know, it was a cry for help when I did it. You know, old Clinton, he's confused. He don't know what he wants. I heard I was cross-dressing. I heard I was, you know, I heard so much stuff behind me doing characters. And all of a sudden, you know, I think that was some of the funnest time. I mean, one of the best times, one of the funnest times of my career. You know, I think it came, it brought the team together. You know, we played around. We flew around. We had fun. And we won under the same, you know, everything happened for a reason. So, you know, who knows? Anything is possible.
Well, Clinton, I mean, I think it gets back to the larger point of how you talk about the media, and you mentioned that these characters were, for you personally, was one of the best times of your career. Did the media, did they at all dampen or damper your ability to shine and continue to shine?
I think I let it become an issue when I shouldn't have. You know, when you get into a battle with the media, it's a no-win situation. They got, you know, the media put out a story every day. And once you portray it negative every day, every day, every day, it's just a negative, negative, negative. He don't want to practice. He don't want to practice. He not practicing today. He just walked out. He took a couple plays in practice. Man, I practice. So, you know, you can't win when you're exposed to the media one a day. Maybe if I was in the media, then I could clear it up. But every day it's a story wrote all over the world from somebody on the outside looking in that's saying you're a bad guy. You can't win with that. And I think for myself, trying to avoid the media and wanting to be a tough cookie, it became nonchalant. Like, you can't win in this situation. It don't matter what I say or what I do. They're going to portray me negative. And you know, I got to the point where I just didn't care. Like, I don't care what they think. I don't care what they say. So then you ignore it and you don't clear it up or you don't say anything. By the time you come clear it up, it's, oh, he should have shut his mouth, and what is he thinking? So, you know, with every story, you take a word out, and it's portrayed and flipped and changed, and, you know, it goes from being a positive, what could have been a positive story to something negative.
But, Clinton, let me ask you this. Looking back on your career, and your, when I say your career with the media, are you happy with the road you took? Are you happy with the way you presented yourself in light of the entire histrionics of Clinton Portis in the media?
I am, you know, because if I don't defend myself, who will? You know, I can't ask the next guy to go clear up my name because the next guy don't know what's going on, you know. I can only be me, and I go to sleep every night comfortable with being me. You know, I don't feel like it's anything the media can expose that's a hidden secret or a hidden agenda or something that's going to be shocking. You know I'm going to come out, I'm going to be a stand-up guy, I'm going to speak the truth. I mean, in no story could you find a position where I lied or I recanted my story. I told the truth. So I feel good about being a stand-up guy, and however that goes, you know. I mean, people always say, any media is good media, you know, any publicity is good publicity. So in some households, I'm looked up to, some households, I'm shunned upon, but I'm in those households, so it don't matter.
And Clinton, on this show, we'd like to play a game called Yes or No. I'll give you a sentence. You tell me yes or no. You ready to play?
Let's go.
Victor Ortiz will beat Floyd Mayweather tonight. Yes or no?
No.
No chance?
No chance.
Oh, he said no. He said no. Move on.
Martin Lawrence's characters are funnier than Clinton Portis's characters.
Yes.
Yes. Wow.
Yes.
So you like
Martin Lawrence, man. Martin Lawrence that made $1 billion in box office hits off his character. So they definitely funnier than Clint Porter's character.
The University of Miami will be a national powerhouse again. Yes or no?
Yes.
You sure?
Good for you, Clint.
I'm positive.
Okay, okay.
You, baby.
And a final question. Clinton Portis will be on the NFL roster in 2011. Yes or no?
Yes.
Clinton,
hey.
Thank you for playing the game.
Hey, dude, do you think you will count as an NFL roster? Because I'm getting ready to sign with a UF team, UFL team when I get off the phone with y'all.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I'm getting ready to sign with a UFL. Going to Canada tomorrow, so one of them got to work out.
So this is breaking news here?
Hey, breaking news. I'm trying out with a Canadian team, and I'm trying out with a UFL team.
Breaking news.
I don't even want a contract. I just want to play and show people I'm healthy.
All right. So you're willing to go to Canada? It's cold up in there. You're a Miami boy. You're a Florida boy.
Man, I've been in Denver and D.C. my whole career, so it's cold and
bold. They have long sleeves for that, right, Clinton?
You said it's what?
I said they have long sleeves for that.
Yeah, they got some stuff to keep you hot.
Paul's a pretty boy. He doesn't. He's not an outdoorsman. He wouldn't know about.
I'm a Northeast boy, so I know cold. But you know what I mean. Canada's cold. It's cold up there. You know. But so let's get this clear. You're going to try out for a UFL team. You're also going to try out for a team in Canada, correct?
Yeah, I'm on my way right now. I'm getting on the plane to Canada as we speak.
All right. Well, good luck to that. Have a safe flight, man. And we wish you nothing but the best of luck with that. And, again, Clinton, where can we find information about you? Where can we find your website and everything?
I don't know what the Canadian Football League website is, but check it out. It's going to tell you how my workout went today. So I'm on my way.
Clinton, a lot of fun here talking to you, man. We would love to have you back in the future, man. And, again, good luck to you moving forward.
All right, man. Y'all take care.
All right. Clinton Portis, free agent NFL running back. He says he's got to try out with a team in Canada, breaking news. And also, he's got to try out with a UFL team. So we'll see what happens with Clinton Portis.
That might have been one of Clinton's new characters. That could have been, Clinton Portis, the Canadian version. I hate to say that through his tenure in the NFL, he was always known to be a jokester, but I have a feeling it doesn't matter where he winds up. Clinton, if he's healthy, he's a contributor, and I think we've seen that in his career.
Well, he says he's going to Canada. So good luck to Clinton Portis in Canada, possibly going to Canada or UFL. I mean, I think he still can play in this league. He's 30 years old, and that's usually a bad number for an NFL running back. But I think the guy still can play in this league. I really do, and I think he can still get it done in this league. And it was, a pleasure talking to Clinton Portis. A lot of fun talking to him, and, we wish him nothing but the best of luck in 2011. No matter where it is, whether it's in the NFL, UFL, or the Canadian Football League, but we'll see what happens with Clinton Portis going forward. He's a funny guy, a lot of fun, and I like his characters better than Martin Lawrence. Just kidding. I mean, no one is funnier than Martin Lawrence in terms of his characters. I mean, Martin Lawrence's characters are just flat out ridiculous in terms of fun and laughter. I mean, they're great. They're great. I love Martin Lawrence, the comedian, and he's a funny guy, an absolute positively funny guy.
He never wrote this, the song that you wrote, and this Clinton Portis. It's interesting to get an athlete of, I think, Paul, looking back off his stature and also his personality. Not just a great NFL player, not just a Pro Bowler, not just a leading rusher in the NFL, but certainly a guy that can give you, and he did give us, great insight. Into what it takes to be successful inside the media, what it takes to be successful inside of other facets of the NFL other than just doing what his job was. I found it particularly interesting when you hear him talk about getting into battles with the media or no win, being able to be yourself. If that's not what the media likes, it can really be hurtful to you, the player. And most importantly, I thought it was extremely interesting to hear him talk about the fact that, like you said, it's at 32 players on a team, what the media does in terms of shooting at players they like or they don't like, it's oftentimes not safe to say that the most highly publicized guy on the team is by far the most benevolent outside of the locker room. And it's not often you get a chance to hear that from a player who is certainly an established NFL running back who can say that and know that. And you look at now, Paul, this NFL, this media, this lockout, what it did, what it proved, and is the NFL, is the media too much, in terms of a battle force for these players?
I mean, the media, you look at it, it can portray you any way they want to portray you, and a lot of times it comes down to guys being close to certain guys having good relationship with certain people in the media, and that's how you're portrayed, and that's how you're talked about through your relationships. I mean, you look at people, the Hall of Fame process, you got a lot of guys not getting in the Hall of Fame because of the way they, because of their relationships with the media. So you look at it, you hope that, that's not the case, but it is the case. And you hope the situation with Clinton Portis, him being outspoken and everything, you hope that does not keep him out of the league, and hopefully he can get back into the league. And let's bring in a guy now, a very good guy, very funny guy, a guy with a lot of energy, the host of Picturica, warm-up host for Dancing with the Stars and American Idol, the one, the only, Mr. Corey Almeida. Corey, how are you, sir?
Paulie G, what's happening, baby? How you doing, man?
Doing well. And Corey, we got it. Let's get to the good news. We'll get to the Steelers and Red Sox later. That's all the bad news. Let's get to the good news.
Let's get the good news right now, Corey. Let's keep the good news going, yeah.
You are the host of Picturica on the Hub Network, and you guys have been nominated for a Daytime Emmy. I mean, tell us the great news. Talk about that.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's kind of been a crazy ride, but you know, Picturica is just running rampant on the Hub Network. They're running the heck out of it. It's on twice a day, 5 days a week, so you can catch it out up to 10 times a week if you want to. And there are some diehards out there that are crazy about it. And then we got nominated for a daytime Emmy for our opening credits and graphics and all the graphics we do during the show. So it's super exciting, you know. It's fun stuff. It's wild and crazy, and to say you're a part of an Emmy nominated show is great, and who knows, after tomorrow it might be an Emmy award winning show.
Exactly. So we got our fingers crossed, and I know you got your fingers crossed. I even got my toes crossed, so hopefully things can work out for you.
I appreciate it. I hope so. Otherwise, I'm just going to go ahead and move to Canada. With
you might as well.
Do something out there.
There's a lot going on up there, Corey.
Apparently.
How much work, I mean, for you, was getting this show to the level and the viewership? I mean, and certainly the Hub Network. I have a 3.5-year-old, and he watches it, and there's great programming on that network.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what, it's funny, I'll touch base on the network first. What I love about the network, and what was so great when, you know, this all happened, it was kind of the perfect storm of things to happen, but the network is great because Hasbro is such a part of our past. Like, when you think about it, like, what were the, you know, for me, the toys I grew up with were G.I. Joes, Transformers. Like, these were the toys that Hasbro, you know, manufactured. So they've taken that market, and then they had, you know, and they've revamped it and kind of rejuvenated the whole thing. And now what you have, like yourself, but you have parents who are, you know, our age, who have kids who are now reliving their past while their kids are creating new memories for themselves. It's crazy, but, you know, I had a dad who was like, yeah, I was watching it, and then Transformers came on, and I was like, I love this episode. I can't believe this episode's back on. And his son was like, this is brand new. And he's like, no, this is not brand new at all. So it's kind of great because it's, you know, it really is what it is. It calls itself the Hub because it is a hub for families to come together. And, you know, it may sound cliche and cheesy, but it really is. You could sit there and watch old programs that you grew up with, and then your kids are watching them for the first time. It's pretty remarkable.
And Corey, your show, see that, you hit the nail right in the head. You talk about the name of the network, and that's really what they did with their ties with Hasbro. Certainly the Transformers and the G.I. Joes, which is very true. My son got involved with Transformers because I watched it, and G.I. Joe, he has all the Transformers. And then we catch your show, not just because you're a faithful follower of Paul and the great Go For It moniker, but it's interesting because you get it, you watch your show once, and for kids that are, my son's only 3.5, hooked on the level of activity, excitement, and what the show allows younger audience to stay involved, because it's not just it's sit there and just watch, as opposed to like the Sprout Network. This show lets them kind of run around and be a part of Oliver, really kind of, that's where his free time is. He will watch and just, you know, play around.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think what, you know, and you're definitely, it's what we want, because our thing is, you know, right now with the way the world is, everything has to be interactive. You know, a kid's not going to sit there and you know, let 5 minutes go by if they can't become interactive. They'll go to the next best thing with iPads and, you know, and iPhones and all this stuff. It's got to be fast. And that was kind of we went through a lot. I mean, we worked our tails off coming up with, you know, these games, because we want it to be just as fun for people at home watching on their TV to play as it is for the live guests and contestants that we have on our show. So we want it to be completely interactive from your couch all the way to the studio. And, you know, for the most part, I think we pretty much nailed it. I know they're really talking about going into this whole 3D format, which will take it to a whole nother level if we start shooting it in 3D and, you know, giving the audience a 3D look at the characters and at these particular items and the things that people are searching for. But that was really it. It was to give it a bright, colorful, fun, totally interactive feel. And people love playing it at home as much as our contestants love it in the studio. But it was definitely a process to come up with these games, because we went through a number of different games, and we're constantly creating because, you know, we're just now looking at hopefully going back in and doing a whole nother round and getting new games going and getting involved with those. But those always take time and energy because, you know, no matter what you do when you come up with a game, contestants are inevitably going to do the one thing that you didn't plan for. So it's kind of crazy how these games evolve and become what they finally are on the episode, on the shows.
And, Corey, more good news. Man, we all know you keep it on and popping as the warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. How's that going for you?
That's been – this was, you know, I personally think I've had a close tie with Idol for the past 8 seasons. And, you know, I have a close tie with the cast in 08 because I, you know, I went on the road and hosted the show on the road that summer with David Cook and David Archuleta, Michael Johns, Carly Smithson, the whole – that was a great group to go on the road with. So I love those guys. But honestly, I think this was probably the best season we've ever had of the show, just from a contestant standpoint, from a producing standpoint, and obviously from a judge's standpoint. Having J-Lo and Steven Tyler in the mix brought a whole new energy to the show. And honestly, when you're doing a show season after season, it can get a bit – you know, it can get a bit old hat. You're doing the same old thing, and yeah, the audience is new, but, you know, but the great thing about this is it reinvigorated everybody. Everybody from, you know, sound and camera, audio, you know, those guys all the way through to the people on stage performing for votes every week. There was a whole new life in American Idol, and they really hit the jackpot because I don't think many people, when they announced that the new judges were going to be J-Lo and Steven Tyler, I don't think many people went to Vegas and said, this is going to be amazing. This is the perfect fit. This is exactly what Idol needed. You know, I don't think people really thought that. But and so it was a roll of the dice. I mean, it really was. And you were either going to, you know, you're either going to be the hero or the goat. And producers came out to be the hero because it was a perfect mix for that show and took it to a whole nother level that we haven't been at in a long, long time. So there was some great energy on the set of Idol this past season. It was really a blast.
And more good news for you, Corey. You shot a pilot in Hong Kong a few weeks back. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was crazy. I was in Hong Kong for the weekend. You know, just a quick little trip to Hong Kong. But yeah, it was wild. It's a great place, a really, really fun place. And I'm such a crazy tech guy as well. Going over there was really fun because there's so much. Every street corner has got vending machines with iPads and all kinds of crazy stuff. But yeah, it's actually for right now, the production company that does Bizarre Foods, which is with Andrew Zimmern, and he goes all over the world eating the craziest, wildest, funkiest stuff. Well, they're doing a spinoff, and the spinoff is a Bizarre Food type show, but it's more bizarre comfort food. So kind of like what would be necessarily comfort food to you and I, like, you know, for me, burgers and fries, wings, mac and cheese, chocolate cake, that's comfort food to us, not necessarily the same to the folks in Hong Kong. And I found that out real fast when they told me what I had to eat. So it's crazy.
We're talking to Corey Almeida. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Corey.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, you know, I had everything from pig intestines to snake soup to, I mean, there was some gnarly stuff in there, but it was a blast and had a whole lot of fun. So hopefully right now they're looking at, you know, at the travel network or food network for them to pick this up and order some episodes so we can go back out and experiment and try some crazy food all over the world and have some fun. It's just basically exploring cultures, all different cultures, through the food that they grew up eating. You know, the stuff that their parents and grandparents put on their plate as a kid and you know, not to go all the way back, but to bring it back to what we started talking about, which is the hub and growing up, you know, growing up with these TV shows that were comfort shows to us. You know, when you go back and you look at stuff like Transformers, G.I. Joe, Thundercats, stuff that we grew up with, same thing. What did you do when you watched those shows? Either your grandmother or your mother, your dad, they were cooking you whatever, you know, you had hot dog and mac and cheese, grilled cheese, whatever it was, while you were watching these shows. So it's comfort TV on the hub and a comfort food show that will hopefully be into production in either, you know, sometime late fall or early in the new year. So it's a lot of fun. Good stuff.
And what does snake soup taste like? I mean, that sounds nasty. Tell me.
Yeah, it's,
tastes like
it's actually... It tastes like chicken. It's the craziest thing. That was the only thing that tastes like chicken. The pig intestines, not so much. But yeah, no, actually, it tastes just like a chicken soup. The steak itself is a little bit tougher. It's not as tender as chicken, so it's a little bit tougher to bite through. But it's actually really good, and they actually cook it in the in some of the venom because it's a cobra. They take a king cobra snake. And that's what they make the soup with. They take some of that venom and cook it in that venom, and you're actually eating some of that. And it was a little funky to me. And they're like, but don't worry, like the venom, what it does is it actually boosts your immune system, and that venom keeps out any of the, you know, other bacteria or anything that you eat from getting in. So it keeps you healthy. And you know, I didn't really believe him until the owner came out, and he's 110 years old. So I just ordered cases of it. I'm like, if you're getting to 110 eating this stuff, just get it for me. Get me as much as possible. But it was actually one of the better things I ate. There was, you know, there was a rotted tofu that I ate that it was an almost instant hurl as soon as I took a bite into it. It was pretty gnarly. I don't want to, you know, hopefully you know, you'll see it on the screen because I came pretty close to it. But it was a great time out there, and Hong Kong's a great spot. It's so packed, so lively. It was a lot of fun out there.
And hold on, you talked about pig intestines. That's chitlins.
That's a hot dog. Yeah, exactly. Pretty much, right? But
yeah,
the way they do it out there, it doesn't look so appealing. You know, the way they literally have the intestines laying out in front of you, and they slice it, and then they skewer it, and they deep fry it, and then they pop it in your mouth. I mean, as long as you deep fry it, you're pretty good. Almost anything can be good deep fried. If you go to any county fair anywhere in the world, they're deep frying everything. So, but yeah, there was the intestines were a little bit funky. And you know, the more, you know, the funkier, the nastier the stuff is that you eat, the harder it is to actually chew it and swallow it. For some reason, those seem to stay in your mouth longer. You know, you just can't take one big gulp. You got to keep chewing and chewing till you get all that flavor out of the intestines. But you know,
maybe you should have used hot sauce. Hot sauce, Corey.
Yeah, I was looking for the hot sauce. I was looking for the ketchup. I was like, "Where's the ketchup? Put ketchup on anything, I'm good." But yeah, they weren't having that. They didn't want to drop the ketchup on it.
We're talking to Corey Almeida, host of Picturica on the Hub Network, Emmy-nominated Picturica on the Hub Network, and also warm-up host Dancing with the Stars and American Idol. Now, Corey, we got to go to the bad news. The bad news is
I'm afraid I
got to
go.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
I got to go now, Paul. Sorry, I got to go.
He's catching a flight to Canada? Are you doing a satellite show in Canada?
Yeah, Clinton and I are taking Canada by storm. I know. I knew it was coming.
Corey,
yeah.
35-7 beat down by the arch nemesis Ravens.
Yep.
Big Ben looked bad. The defense looked bad. Everybody looked bad.
Yeah.
Should we be concerned?
Well, you know, I wasn't concerned going into that game because I thought they were firing on all cylinders in preseason. I mean, you know, I thought they looked great during the preseason. I know you can't really judge much off of preseason, except I feel like this season, more than past seasons, you kind of could gauge a little bit off of the preseason because of the lockout. You know, when they were, you know, OTAs and there was a lot of camp, you didn't really have to worry about preseason. You know, they played a quarter, a couple drives, a few snaps, and that was it. But now, because of the lockout, I felt so many teams are trying to get their first team acclimated and back into the speed of an actual game. I feel like the preseason weighed a little bit more on this season than seasons in the past. And I felt great about how we looked coming out of that. I felt great with what we did to Vic in the preseason. But, you know, it was gnarly. I think that opening three-play drive, I mean, it was three plays. That's all they needed to score, and I think that was just rough. But I will say this, because, you know, I always keep the faith, and the Steelers always seem to find a way, even during games, to bounce back, although that one they weren't coming near bouncing back from. But I have faith in Tomlin as a coach, and just the pride that organization has Now, if they come out and lay an egg against Seattle, talk to me next weekend because season's over. I mean, that's the bottom line.
I would agree with you.
They have got to come out, and they got to put a beat down. I mean, they've got to win by at least 20. Like, they've got to win by double digits for sure. And, you know, and this is what I say. First of all, that's a tough game to open with. To open with the Ravens on the road. So not only is it the Ravens, but, you know, they're a division opponent for us. So to open up against your rival on their home turf after the success that we've had against them, marching through the season, marching through the playoffs, and getting to Super Bowls, and keeping them out of Super Bowls, you know. So their motivation,
right?
Not that our motivation was less than, but they had some motivation, and it was a home game for them. It's a huge emotional game. So you can't really – those division games are always tough, you know. I mean, even Cincinnati, Cleveland, those guys, they're tough because they know you. You play each other all the time. You're in each other's face. So that's where I can kind of, that's been kind of the silver lining. I mean, I've been able to catch my breath because I'm like, okay, it's a division game on the road. Baltimore's a tough team. They're contenders. They're right. You know, they've been knocking on the doorstep for you know, a few seasons now, right there. But like I said, if they don't come out and put the beat down on Seattle, then we've got a problem because if they can't take care of. Who knows? I don't even know who they've got behind center in Seattle. I know Whitehurst
Tavares
is there.
Jackson.
I know that Jackson is there. I mean, if they can't come out and take care of that, we're going to have some problems.
A lot of problems. 99 big problems if you don't win this week against the Seahawks. Is it possible, Corey, that the Ravens have finally surpassed the Steelers, or is it, again, just week one?
I think the thing with those two teams is I feel like almost their blueprint, if you strip them down, their blueprint is almost identical. You know, they pride themselves on being a hard-nosed defense, on just stuffing you. You can't run the ball against them, and they're gonna come after you with everything they got. They've got an amazing, you know, second line there with your linebackers and outside linebackers. So I feel like that defensively, they kind of have a blueprint. I feel offensively, you know, they're getting a little bit. They're letting Flacco do his thing. I don't know that Flacco is that quarterback. You know, that's Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, Manning quarterback, and I don't know that he will ever be that, but I do think he's great at situational play and living to play another down, which a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL don't do. But being smart with the ball, he doesn't turn it over a ton, and he gets the job done. Quick slants, over the middle, seam passes. He can throw a deep pass, but I just don't feel he's as electric as Aaron Rodgers, you know, and so I feel like he's smart and he does that. Now flip over to Ben, I think Ben with his blessing is his curse, his ability to move and make plays out of nothing, you know, that's what won us the Super Bowl against Arizona, was his ability to scramble and find Santonio Holmes in the back of the end zone with time. I mean, but it's also what, you know, caused him to scramble and throw, you know, what did he throw? Three interceptions against Green Bay in the Super Bowl.
Three interceptions.
So that's where they're. So I feel like they kind of equal each other out. So I feel like they're kind of neutral. They kind of are both on the same playing field. And I just feel like it's whoever brings their A game that particular day. So for me, I would much rather take a beat down in week one because A, we got it out of the way, and I know. With Tomlin and that coaching staff, LeBeau, are you kidding me? You think LeBeau is not beating the snot out of them all week at practice for them letting up that, you know, 35 points? So I feel like you can bounce back from that in week one. To get beat down 35-7 in the playoffs, that would be a little bit more demoralizing. I feel like there's still a ton of season left. So I'm optimistic. I don't know that they've necessarily – I think that they're pretty tight. I think you're evenly matched up at the top of that division. So I'm not, you know, I don't know that they've surpassed, although they just continue to gain weapons for wide receivers, and they've got, you know, a running back there who's starting to do some stuff. So this season I think will be the season to tell. I think they're either going to stay where they were, which is, you know, pretty much equal, and we'll see if they can win the big game, or if they build on this momentum, they could be a scary team to have to deal with come the end of the season and the postseason.
We're talking to Corey Almeida, host of Picture Rica on the Hub Network, also warm-up host, Dancing with the Stars, and American Idol. Corey, some more bad news. Your Boston Red Sox, even though they did win last night, back it pitched all right, but they did beat the Rays last night. But this has been a tough month for the Red Sox. Will they choke this thing away?
Oh, gosh. It's been pretty miserable. Up until 7 years ago, you know, this is always the way it went. We would be ahead in the division and then slowly but surely just blow the whole thing and not even make the playoffs. At least we have a couple World Series now, so it's like, okay, well, they've actually gotten over the hump in the past, but it's definitely one of those things that even being a guy from the East Coast, and you still have that sense of pessimism, and you're like, yeah, here we go again. We're going to blow this thing. We're not even going to make wild card, you know. But this has been just a they can't put runs on the board. I mean, they'll put 18 runs on the board in one game, and then
right.
they'll put one on the they'll combine for, you know, 10 points in their 10 runs in their next 10 games. So it's you know, for me, that's what scares me, is that there's no it's just it's one or the other. You're either hot and you're smoking hot and you're in a slump like they are right now. So I think for me, if they don't turn this thing around, I think even going into the postseason, even if they kind of, you know, wean their way into the postseason and kind of get in there with the wild card being a game or two ahead of Tampa Bay, that's still not going to be good. I don't see us going far in the postseason. Now, if they can somehow catch some fire, it would be great. But the bats that were catching fire before, the Ellsbury's and all that, you know, they're just quiet right now. And
right.
when you've got somebody like Wakefield on the mound, you got to put some points on the board, because he's going to, you know, it's tough to predict what he's going to do. I mean, Beckett can go hard, Lester can go hard, but, you know, and you can always, you know, you know what to expect from them. But Wakefield, he's either on and money or he's getting lit up. So if you don't put at least a half dozen runs on the board, that's a minimum you need to put on the board when Wakefield's pitching. You're going to be in trouble, you know, and so it could be tough. But, I mean, I just look at Detroit right now, and Detroit is just, I mean, they're going into the postseason in the exact opposite way we are. You know, if we even make
right.
it, Detroit is just, I mean, Verlander's a beast, and you're going to have to face him at least twice. You know, and that
That's
dude
true.
Is lights out. That dude is lights out. So it's you know, it's not looking too promising for my Bo Sox. I wish I could have a little bit more faith. You know, and so it's tough in to see this slump going on and have the Steelers take a beat down. It's really been a tough week here. But I have a little bit more faith in my Steelers bouncing back than I do in the old Red Sox. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, they have two more games against. I know they've got one more against Tampa tonight. I don't know if they have another one tomorrow. But so these are big games, and Tampa Bay seems to have our number too. They're a tough pest. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. Keep our fingers crossed, and hopefully these bats will come alive. And if they do, this is the time to do it.
I think you guys will hold on. I think you'll get into the playoffs, but all bets are off after the playoffs. I don't see you guys getting back to the World Series.
Yeah, not this year.
Not at all. Corey, let's go back to the good news now. The website.
Canada.
Where can we go to find information about Corey Live?
Go back to Canada. Let's go back. Canada's beautiful this time of year. So the good news, the website, Corey Live, obviously Corey Live, everything is up there, CoreyLive.com. Everyone can kind of see where I'm at, what I'm doing. I'm actually revamping the entire website. I've got a production team. We're going to put together just a killer website that's going to be out, hopefully by the end of the year, but websites are kind of crazy and they get to be really tricky when you're putting them up, but the one that I'm going to do some real cool stuff on this website. So, but right now, yeah, Corey Live. It'll always be CoreyLive.com, but look for the new website, which will probably be launching. We're going to start shooting it and producing it and putting it together in the next month or so. So hopefully by the end of the year, the new website, which is going to be really interactive, it's going to have a lot up there for people to go to. You know, plenty of video blogs from me backstage at all the shows that I have going on. So I'm going to be doing some stuff backstage, Dancing with the Stars, obviously Idol, So You Think You Could Dance. We just wrapped it, America's Got Talent. And then I'll be doing some work on The Voice for the next season. So I'll be doing all that, plus whatever I do on the road and wherever I'm going to be, if I'm, you know, hosting a gig, DJing a gig, whatever it takes, it'll all be up there.
Wow. You're a busy man, and I guess busy is good for you. I mean, you're a busy man. You're everywhere.
I got to keep up with you guys, man. You got your finger on the pulse.
Hong Kong a couple weeks ago.
Right.
You're about to go to Canada.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I may never come back, though. Well, you know what they say. Once you go to Canada, you can't get out. But the thing is, it's going to be, yeah, we'll see. Howie Mandel's from Canada. My boy Howie, who I just spent time with over on America's Got Talent. He's a Canadian boy. But so him and Clinton could have a lot to talk about.
Exactly. You too. You're going to Canada as well.
Yeah.
Corey,
yeah, yeah. No, it's
always,
man. It's a good time.
A lot of fun with you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck with Dancing with the Stars, American Idol. Hopefully you bring back that Emmy, Daytime Emmy for Picturica. I mean, we wish you nothing but the best of luck with all the things you got out there, man. You're doing some great things, some big things, and keep doing what you're doing.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you guys having me on. We're having a lot of fun. So, yeah, we'll keep you posted. You guys are always – I always got you locked in. So when big news happens, you know I'll be hitting you up first. So
definitely, Corey, and we appreciate it. We appreciate
it. All right, man. Well, thanks
a
lot. We'll stay in touch. We'll talk once the Steelers go on like a nice six-game winning streak or something right now.
I got the Steelers going to the Super Bowl, but I got them losing in the Super Bowl to the Philadelphia Eagles.
To the Eagles, huh? There it is. They got a tough one this week, the Eagles.
I think they'll get by. Michael Vick has a lot to prove. Going back to Atlanta,
yeah,
it's like going back to Cali. You know,
right.
He's going to do his thing.
Yeah, he sure is. That could be a good Super Bowl, a PA Super Bowl.
Definitely an all-PA Super Bowl, and I think the Philadelphia Eagles, the east side of the state, will come
right
out on top. But we'll see.
Awesome. Awesome. I hope it's true, man. I hope it's true. I'll be there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'll be out there in Indianapolis. So hopefully the Steelers will be out there. We'll see what happens.
Hopefully for you, they'll be out there. And hopefully for me, I'm a big-time Philadelphia Eagles fan. The Eagles will be out there as well.
We could do the show live from the Super Bowl. Come on out to Indy. We'll do the show live right there. It'll be great.
Maybe. That's an idea.
If it happens, we'll do it. If it happens, we will do it, and we'll do the whole thing. That we'll say right now,
definitely,
we'll make it an exclusive. If the Eagles and Steelers are in the Super Bowl, you and I in Indy doing a live show.
Sounds like a plan. You forgot Jeremy as well. He's got to come along too.
Jeremy,
I'm afraid he's going to get stuck
in Canada.
Exactly. We had to get in there. If we don't get in there one more time, if you start with it, you got to end with it.
Always end with it. Thank you guys so much. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, Corey.
Guys, be good.
You too. Corey Almeida. Host of Picturico on the Hub Network, warm-up host, American Idol, Dancing with the Stars. The guy is busy. He's in Hong Kong, and he talked about pig intestines. And that's nothing but chitlins, man. I mean, put some hot sauce on it, and you got a party. You got yourself an absolute party. Nothing like some chitlins, man. I haven't had that in a long time.
Then cook it up, Paul. Have it tonight for your fight party. You bought the fight. We have an average. We haven't really talked about the fight yet, but you bought it. So cook it up.
We're gonna talk about the fight, and we're gonna bring in shortly now the sparring partner for Victor Ortiz, Steve Forbes. So we're gonna get his insight on the big fight tonight, and it's gonna be a big one. I mean, I'm a fight I've been looking forward to for a long time.
You
really looking?
Well, I mean. Now's, I guess, as good as any to talk about or start to prep for this fight. I'm sure, you know, it to me, I hate to say this because you don't want to sit around and say that there's no point in watching it, but I think there's no chance, and I'll say it, no chance again, that Ortiz wins this fight. Mayweather is a very good fighter. He's still, you know, him, Pacquiao, I think that's it. And which one of them it is, I think you make good arguments one way or the other. That's not the fight. But tonight, I think it will be very clear in everyone's mind that, you know, Floyd Mayweather, I don't see this fight going more than five or six rounds. I see absolutely positively Mayweather will wipe the floor with him. He is pound for pound, you know, and arguably continues to be and reign, Paul, as one of the, if not the premier boxer, you know, in boxing. And whether we like him or not, whether, you know, the wise out there want to protect themselves, when it comes to boxing, you know, Floyd Mayweather knows how to do that and knows how to do that very well. And I think tonight will be, you know, just another example of his ability, you know, to reign as a world champion.
Well, I'm a big Floyd Mayweather guy, and I expect Floyd to get it done tonight, just like he's gotten it done 41 other times. And I think it's going to be a good fight, though. Victor Ortiz, one thing he's going to bring you is he's going to bring the fight. And he's a guy, you know, throws a lot of punches. He's active. He's a southpaw. Floyd's had problems with southpaws in the past. Guy with some power, some speed, man. So it's going to be an interesting fight come tonight. And, again, I expect Floyd to get it done. It's going to be a good fight. I think it's worth the money. But I think Floyd ultimately will get it done. I really do. And 24/7, I mean, is there anything better on TV than 24/7? 24/7 is, that's some big-time great television there. You got the Mayweathers arguing. You got all the good stuff. Floyd with Miss Jackson, his lovely fiance. I mean, 24/7 is some great TV. It doesn't get any better than 24/7. Maybe Picture Rico on the Hub Network, but not 20. It doesn't get any better than 24/7.
No, I would agree. I think that you know, it's certainly I think any time you get a chance to go inside the locker rooms of any show, and I think HBO does a great, their 24/7 puts you right inside the locker room. You know, let's start to say this, Paul. I guess I'll question you, and I certainly, we know both you and I now have come out and said that we both believe that it will be Mayweather. But this fight, though, and as you say, 24/7. I mean, can or could the distraction of you know, Mayweather's personal life, what's been going on, circulating in the media, is there any way that seeps in, you know, to this fight? And for certainly people I don't know, there's been some involvement with the law, and you know, obviously Mayweather has had to deal with it very publicly, and certainly it wasn't a big piece of 24/7, but it's been a big piece of the media. We all know about that. And can what's happening, you know, in his real life, walk into this fight with this opponent tonight and cost him, this fight?
I mean, again, it's going to be a great fight, a big time fight, man, and it's a super fight, and that's what you like. That's what you like to see in boxing, super fights. I love a super fight, and let's bring in a guy now who was a sparring partner for Victor Ortiz, boxer Steve Forbes. Steve, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man, doing well. And, Steve, let's get right down to it. You were in camp with Victor Ortiz. How did Victor look in camp?
You know what? He looks good, man. He looks strong. He looks focused. You know, he works extremely hard. But as you know, well, I don't know how many of the viewers know, but, I turned pro with the Mayweathers and won a world championship in my career with the Mayweathers, too, so... and, you know, we all know Floyd Mayweather works hard. But, yeah, Victor looks good. You know, it seems like he's not letting the big event of a big super fight affect him. And if it is affecting him, he's doing a good job of disguising. I mean, he looks comfortable. He looks, you know, he looks like he's ready to fight.
And you talked about it. I mean, you've been in camp with the Mayweathers many times before you started with the Mayweathers. But Floyd over the years has had problems with southpaws. Do you think that might be the case tonight?
I think it could be. I mean, Floyd is a technical genius inside the ring. And, I mean, you know, I think if he'll have problems, it'll be, you know, it would be – usually he can figure out those problems. But like you said, I think he does have some problems. I mean, you look at the guys, the southpaws who he's faced. I remember he got stunned by Chop Chop Corley in a fight. That Judah did well, you know, gave him some fits early in the fight. So I think it could be a problem. But, I mean, he's such a great fighter. I think if it's a problem just with the southpaw stance, it would be early.
Okay. And I think you said about Floyd one thing, his ability to kind of think in the ring and kind of, you know, like you said, he got stunned early by Zab, stunned early by Chop Chop Corley, but he always found a way to figure it out. Talk about that in Floyd Mayweather, his ability to figure things out.
Floyd Mayweather is, you know, the essential thinking fighter. I mean, a lot of fighters say, you know, they're in there thinking, but this guy is actually in there thinking. I mean, he's able to figure, it's like a puzzle. He's able to figure a puzzle out. It may take him a while, but once he sticks to his plan. I mean, he doesn't change, doesn't waver. Once something's working, he'll do it all night. I mean, we've
right.
seen many fights where he hasn't even jabbed at all. He just threw left hooks. But that seemed that was all he needed. You know, he found something that will work, whether it was a left hook or lead right hands, and you've seen him throw over and over to score. So, yeah, he's just one of those guys that can just figure things out, and he has an ability to adapt to a lot of different things, which, you know, especially being in boxing with such a fast-paced thing happening, it's, you know, really extraordinary to be able to do that and still be calm.
Right.
Well, Steve, let me ask you this. What happened then? I mean, you've trained with them, and certainly you know what happens at, you know, in the corner during that 1 minute break. Is there a lot of back and forth? Is the modification set usually at the break of each round, or is he actively during the fight, literally making real time, if you will, adjustments?
During the fight, I think he. Making real adjustments. I mean, you heard him say, I'm sure, in interviews that he doesn't watch his films of the fighters, and, you know, of course he does. You know, I mean, he the guy is like a scientist when it comes to, like, he breaks down every aspect of, well, he used to, you know, I don't know if he still does, but he used to years ago, you know, when he was just turning pro, would break down everything they do, mimic their moves, and kind of, you know, watch for any weaknesses. I don't know if he does that anymore because, you know, a lot of years have went by and, you know, I believe he truly does trust in his skills. But, no, he makes adjustments midstream, inside the ring. He'll see something that's working and he'll just stick with it.
We're talking to boxer Steve Forbes, and Steve was a sparring partner for Victor Ortiz as Victor Ortiz prepares for his big fight tonight against Floyd Mayweather. And, Steve, you look at it, man, Ortiz has a lot of power, has the speed, but what will exactly he need to do to beat Floyd?
I think he would have to get under Floyd's skin inside the ring. I think he'd rough him up a bit. And one thing, too, I got to say about Victor Ortiz, which is, you know, you see a lot of guys with punching power, and, you know, if they don't knock you out in a certain amount of rounds, then, you know, it's not going to happen. What I've noticed in Victor Ortiz is the way he's trained for this fight is his power, it doesn't change from 1 to 12. It's the same strength and same, you know, it doesn't decrease. You know, I mean, I don't know how he's prepared in the past, but, you know, seeing him in the gym, being in there with him and knowing that and watching him in there, I noticed that his punching power didn't decrease. Whether he was going
right on
10 rounds that day or 12 or what, it was still strong. If he wanted to kind of crank it up, I would see, you know. And I'm like, man, that's really
interesting. I was like, your power doesn't change. You know, it doesn't decrease. So that's in his favor. That's a plus. I mean, because
right.
It only takes one shot for a person to get relaxed and get caught. So that I found that really interesting about him, especially being young and with his energy. And he's a strong welterweight. He's a big welterweight. You know, I think he's going to end up being a junior middleweight when it's all said and done, or possibly a middleweight. But he's a big guy. And Mayweather, I don't know the real last big guy he faced, you know, besides Oscar De La Hoya. I mean, Shane Mosley.
I guess we have to say Baltimore.
Baltimore, pretty big strong guy.
Let me ask you this, Steve, because I talked about this right before we brought you in. Given the fact that, again, let's bring the whole circle here, what Mayweather is dealing with outside the ring that's very publicized, I mean, how much of a reality can you talk about Ortiz getting under his skin, maybe inside the ring, bringing something up? Can Mayweather allow outside factors here to catch him off guard and potentially cause, like, a meltdown, if you will, or a catastrophe in this fight, or is there little to no chance of that?
It could happen, you know, and I had said this to somebody, and not in an interview, just a casual conversation with one of my friends. I said, I mean, you given that Mayweather's been out of the ring, you know, 16 months or so, he has some brittle hands, you know, he's had a publicized big, huge argument with his father during a fight. They've gotten to it in the past, but it was never during him training for a fight. You know, he's always had his father's advice. You know, even though he wasn't his trainer, he would always come in the gym and kind of give his advice and tell him how to break this guy down. And to have something so an explosion like that with having that, and then having the 6 pending cases going on, I mean, you know, that can you know, be a tough thing to deal with. And then you got a kid. And Victor Ortiz, kind of like a stubborn kid that doesn't seem to be intimidated or fall into the traps of, you know, Mayweather getting in the face and I'm the best. You know, Victor doesn't seem nervous to me at all. So, I mean, with that and him feeling a little disrespected by Victor Ortiz, I mean, it could be a bad thing with all those things along with that in itself. I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, I'm interested to see what happens tonight as anybody else.
And Steve, you've been around the Mayweathers, like you said, and we saw that big blow up, Floyd Jr., Floyd Sr. You think these two will ultimately reconcile?
I think so. I hope so, man. I mean, they're kind of similar in ways. You know, they're really strong. Strong-willed, strong-minded. I hope so. I mean, nobody wants to see that. You know, that
right.
Watching that, you know, hurt me. You know, I was like, oh man, this don't need to be happening. And it seemed like it started like over. There was a lot of hurt thing because it started more of as a joke. They wasn't even talking about each other. You know, it started over something else. So, you know, that was. I hope they reconcile. You know, I would hate to see it end like that.
And like you said, it seemed kind of innocent, and it just kind of blew up out of nowhere.
Yeah. It did.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's like, man, you don't want to see that. I feel bad for both guys, you know, because that's, I mean, and to have it, to have everybody, the whole world see it.
Right.
You know, yeah.
I think I felt bad more for Floyd Sr., than Junior during that argument. I mean, you know, granted, you know, the issues are their issues, but I mean, like you said, it was so public, and I think that was the worst thing of it all.
Yeah, you know what? I could agree with you on that. You know, I think you could hear the hurt in Floyd Senior's voice. You know, a few times when he, you know, you could feel it. You know, watching him and I mean. Yeah, that would be tough. I couldn't imagine having something like that with any of my, you know, any of my kids. You know, that would be tough.
But is Steve, the relationship, is it tough to be, you know, around Floyd Mayweather in terms of the media persona that he puts on? Is that him outside of the camera as well then?
You know, I would say sometimes it is. I mean, sometimes I think a lot of the time it's a little more for show. But I mean, sometimes you can't constantly just be like that on TV and then not be like that. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think sometimes it's more, you know, more shown on TV as far as a little more hyped up, a little more. You know, and then he's more a little reserved with no cameras. But, I mean, sometimes that creeps over into, you know, no TV there also. I mean, you know, you see the stacks of money he's running. I mean, that is real. He walks, he does do that, you know, so that's not fake, you know.
So you look at it, Steve, your last fight against Kareem Mayfield, you were stopped in 10 rounds. At this point, Steve, do you continue on or do you retire?
Well, I mean, with that, it's a lot of stuff behind the scenes, and that's why I brought up the whole cases and mental stuff with Floyd, because that affects you, man. I mean, I had a, you know, custody thing with my kids and stuff like that. So, and also that welterweight is just too big for me. So,
right.
You know, I'll see. I mean, it's a possibility I may fight late October, November. You know, getting a chance to do some boxing with Ortiz, and, you know, I really gave him a lot of good work. And, you know, it made me seem like I could probably do it a little longer. I just got to be focused. I can't have outside of the ring disturbances going on. And so we'll see. You know, hopefully, you know, I'm still in the gym, and I feel pretty good. And you know, we'll see what happens.
And, Steve, like you said, you know the Mayweathers very well. You know Victor Ortiz pretty well. We got to get a prediction out of you.
It's hard for me to predict. I will say, you know, you got a favorite Mayweather. Could a upset happen? It's possible. I mean, it could happen. And then if there's a chance of Mayweather to lose, this is the perfect time that it could happen, you know. I don't know. I think it's going to be a good fight. I think it's going to be an excellent fight. I think, you know, we're going to get some interesting things in that ring tonight. I don't know. You know, it's one of the things, you know, if Mayweather can go out here and look great, then I think he gets full credit. And if Victor can go out here and pull it off, he should get full credit. You know, it's hard for me to say. I mean, of course, you got to favor Mayweather. I mean, he hasn't been beaten. He's a great fighter. You know, but, you know, with all that stuff behind him, I don't know.
So you can't give me a prediction here, sir?
I can't give a prediction, man. Boxing is crazy. Boxing is
right.
I don't know.
Yeah, you know very well how crazy it is. Where can we find information about Steve Forbes?
I mean, you can always hit me on my Facebook. I'm always posting up stuff on there. StevieForbes.2, you know, on Facebook. So I'm always on there. So
sounds good, Steve. And everybody, make sure you hit him up on Facebook. Follow this guy, Steve Forbes. It was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And, again, let's do this again.
Oh, anytime.
All right. Steve Forbes, sparring partner for Victor Ortiz, also a boxer himself. And, again, Steve Forbes knows the Mayweathers as well. Roger trained him. Jeff trained him. So he knows the Mayweathers. He knows both sides here. He knows both sides. So we shall see what happens tonight. Real quick, I'll give my prediction. Again, I like Floyd tonight. Jeremy, I'm assuming you like Floyd as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, I will say this. I think Steve Forbes' cast, I like him. I thought Steve led a lot of very interesting discussion. I like him a little bit less. I will say that after listening to Steve, but I do. I like him.
All right. Mayweather tonight. Jeremy likes Mayweather. I like Mayweather as well. We want to thank Clinton Portis for stopping by. Hopefully he has a lot of good luck in Canada or UFL, wherever he's going to land. We want to thank Corey Almeida, host of Picture Rico on the Hub Network, and also host of Dancing with the Stars, warm-up host, Dancing with the Stars and American Idol. Wish him nothing but the best of luck. Willie Rofe, of course, we wish him but the best of luck. Steve Forbes, we wish him nothing but the best of luck moving forward, and we thank him for stopping by. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgann, and make sure you follow the show on Twitter. For Jeremy Yespe, this is Paul Gant. Hope you have a great day. See you later. Take care. Bye.